Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry, and today we're going to be focusing on failures in dentistry. And so I'm here with my fantastic co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley. He's a researcher, he's a tech entrepreneur, and a leader bringing taboo topics to the forefront of dentistry.
Yes, and I am here with Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a speaker, a coach, an educator, and he's passionate about helping people get out of their own way.
Absolutely.
And this is a good topic for getting out of your own way.
It is. We're gonna talk about the F word, which is failure in this context. And so, Kyle, why don't you talk about your opinion of the F word and maybe some alternatives?
Yes. So I think that in dentistry, we're too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Everything that we do when something goes wrong, let's say a crown comes off, we say, oh, the crown failed. We place an implant. The implant doesn't integrate. We say, oh, it failed.
Yep.
You know, the denture has a sore spot. It's a failure.
Yeah.
And in other professions, even other medical professions, there's different words for this.
Yep.
We go to catastrophize everything to the worst possible. It's a failure. And I think that idea of calling it a failure puts a lot of the emphasis on us.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because I mean, think about it. We don't say the patient failed. We say it's a failure. It
Yes.
Meaning the procedure, the restoration, the
that
graft.
We did.
Yeah. That
that
we
we
did,
were
right?
paid for, that we're responsible for.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, as the phrase goes, if what God gave you failed, what makes you think that what man or woman is putting in there is going to be any more successful? And so,
yeah.
You know, I know you talk about the multifaceted elements of when things don't go right, and it's more than just a linear representation. So give us some background on that.
Yeah, well, I used to think that you could blame two people when there was, quote unquote, a failure.
Yeah.
You could blame me, right? The dentist.
Yep.
can prep too deep, prep too shallow, place the implant wrong, not take the right VDO. I mean, you know, of course, we can do things wrong. We're human.
Yep.
And then the other person would be the patient, right? The patient bit down on the temporary, or they didn't floss when they were supposed to, or they were supposed to eat, you know, take their antibiotics, and so their implant failed or something like this. And usually, no matter what happened, I still blamed myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even if the patient came back and said, oh, yeah, you know, I bit on this, I shouldn't have to, I still was like, okay, I'll fix it, and did everything myself. But I realized that it's a triangle of blame, meaning that, yes, I can do things wrong. Yes, the patient can do things wrong. However, even if I do everything right and he or she does everything right, things may still happen because there's things that are out of our control.
Exactly.
You have genetics, you have diet, you have physics and biology that we can't control all of that. And so what's important in this is internalizing this, giving yourself grace when
Yeah.
something does happen.
Yeah.
And also one of the most important aspects of it is then communicating that to the patient.
100%.
Because otherwise the patient just thinks, oh, well, you did this crown, let's say, and the crown broke. So then it's your fault, right?
Well, and we've done a lot of this to ourselves, because not only is there the F word, but there's the P word. The P word meaning permanent. Like, what a disservice we've done. Like, I mean, think about it. If
such a good point.
If you were to go in, and I don't want to equate what we do with cars, but let's do it for a minute. If you went in and took your car into the shop and they said, we did a permanent repair, and then it breaks, what would you think?
Yeah.
Like, come on, people. And so, you know, I'll never forget, I was young in practice, and there was this very large gentleman, just really, you know, a significant masseters, et cetera. Huge Bruxer, had a night guard for 2 or 3 years, comes into me. I was the new associate, by the way. The senior dentist had to retire quickly due to health reasons. And he said, you need to redo this because it wore through after 3 years. And so We went through this whole, do you replace the tires under car, all that stuff.
Yes.
But we've trained our patients with the P word and other elements to make them think that everything we do is going to last forever. And it's just, we all know that's not the case. So what can we do to help ourselves not fall into that trap as well, right?
Yeah, I love that analogy with tires.
Yeah.
You know, you buy a tire, and if you get a nail in the tire pulling out of the dealership,
Yep.
guess what? You're paying for it again, right? Unless you bought a tire insurance.
Yeah. Well, and it was really interesting with this patient because it ended up being this really, let's call it wild circular argument, because I looked at him and I said, "Let me ask you something. Why do you believe you need this? Because I'm wearing my teeth away." Okay, great. So the guard is there to protect you from wearing your teeth away. Yes. So let me ask you this. In your opinion, which do you think is stronger, your teeth or the guard? Well, the guard's plastic. Okay. And so it became this huge circular argument. But I've thought about it now that I've had some distance from it. What were the conversations or the impressions or the ideas that this patient had been exposed to? No, I'm not like blaming the retired dentist necessarily. I'm just talking about more globally relative to setting ourselves up for failure because of how we communicate with people.
Well, I think that's a huge topic is how do we communicate this? And before we go on, because I do want to talk about that, I want to change the wording that we use. So if I break my ankle and I go to our mutual friend Mike, who's a foot and ankle surgeon, and he fixed my ankle. And you know, he puts plates in, I have to get surgery, all this stuff. I pay for the surgery. Now let's say 5 years later, I go back and I'm like, you know, Mike, I still limp. You think he's doing the surgery for free? You think the hospital time is free? No, I'm gonna pay for every sponge and suture and anesthetic cartridge. I'm gonna pay for everything again. But in dentistry, we don't have this. So the term is revision. You have to do a revision surgery. We have to do a revision crown. We have to do a revision denture. And that's easy to say before. It's not easy to say after the fact. And so going back to the communication is we have to prepare our patients for the fact that nothing is permanent, what we do. And more than likely, it will need to be serviced at some time. Going, you know, I love cars and I love that analogy that you gave is we don't buy a car and never change the oil, never take it for service, never change the tires, never put gas in it, never, you know, add water, coolant, and expect it to run and work for 100,000 miles. But in
It's
dentistry, that's what our patients think. And I can't blame the patients, like you said.
no.
I think we've set this up ourselves in our own profession, and it's time for
So
it to change.
here's another interesting thing, and I'll use myself as an example. So I have no restorations in my head, but I do have an implant and an implant crown.
Is
Why?
that from a missing tooth?
Yeah, because I, well, we'll get there. So
Okay.
I fractured 14, was symptomatic, needed endo. Fantastic endodontist. When I went in there, we talked about the fact that fractured teeth have a 70% failure rate. So a year later, when it failed, what did I think? Oh, yeah, okay. And that's what happened. It needed to be removed. We placed the implant. Oh, and by the way, the implant didn't integrate. Side note, happened to my brother too. So there's your triangle of
Genetics.
blame, genetics. And so what did I think when the implant didn't integrate? Was I happy about it? Of course
No.
not. But I knew there's, a small percentage rate of lack of integration. Did I like it? No. But was I blaming anybody? Of course not. Why would I do that? Because I had a different expectation. So I use myself as the example,
Yeah, it's a great example. And at the beginning, when you were getting the endo and the doctor had said to you, this has a 70% failure rate over whatever, 10 years, let's say, You were informed that you could have made the choice to not go through with that.
That's correct. That's
You could
correct.
have said, you know, let's extract the tooth. I don't want to deal with that. And
And
that's what's so important is setting the expectation, letting the patient make the decision. And let you think that endodontist was worried about you leaving. I think he or she, whoever did it, knew that if you said, well, that's ridiculous. Like, if this fails in 5 years, you're not going to do it again.
right.
They know that if you were to leave before you do that, good riddance.
Exactly.
Because that means you're
Exactly.
unreasonable.
Exactly. You know, and it's I will also say to you and everybody listening too, I actually didn't remember that high failure rate of endodontics on fractured teeth. It just wasn't in my daily conscience. So when he was sharing that with me, it really piqued my interest and really, well, my attention, I guess would be a better way to put it. And you're right, I could have chosen right then and there to say, no, let's remove it, but I wanted to maintain it. I wanted to restore it if I could. And I remember I was actually traveling and I was observing a periodontist office in Columbus, Ohio, and I felt something on my palate and they took a CT scan and I took one look at it. I'm like, oh crap.
This is
So
when the endo got infected afterwards.
but it was a good year and a half later or so. Fun fact, it was right before the pandemic started, but that's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother story.
So you have this idea of failures, and hopefully we can change the wording to be more of revisions. I mean, even complication is better than failure. I think that's a continuum where you have revision, complication, failure. I think we should also think that every year we're going to have a failure quota. So that could be clinical failures, that could be relationship failures, that could be anything, and set it up at the beginning of the year. Let's say I write myself a letter at the end of every year and, you know, preparing for the next year, and know that I'm going to have a certain amount of failures. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's three, maybe it's five, maybe it's 20. However, be prepared for it. It's almost like having ex like setting the expectations for yourself. You know, I'm really big on setting expectations and communicating that, but now I'm really doing it for myself. And the whole idea of it is a topic we've talked about before, which is awareness, being aware so that when it happens, you don't spiral. You see it as, this is one of my failures. There's going to be many of these this year or this month, this week. And I'm going to learn how to learn quickly from this.
And I think I love that. And here's what I'll add. You know, my certification in happiness studies is coming in handy. You know, the idea of expecting the challenges, I agree with, and let's spin it just ever so slightly. I acknowledge that I'm human. I acknowledge that every single procedure I do has a certain percentage rate of necessary revision or ineffectiveness. Therefore, when and if this occurs, I'm going to go back to understanding that every procedure has a small percentage of revision challenges. This isn't about me. This is about the procedure, and I'm going to use it as a way to learn because there may be certain elements of it I can learn from because we're all human. So that we can move forward. So I like your idea of like the expectation, but let's also color it with I'm not going to take this on as a burden, right?
I think some of that is in our identity as dentists. So when we place our identity as being a dentist and all of our self-worth on our clinical abilities, once we separate that, you're still going to have complications. You're still going to have problems or patients that are pissed off, but it doesn't keep you up all night. It doesn't cause you to have an upset stomach and not eat or eat too much or, you know, have you cry all the time. Because that was what it was for me. That was why complications were so challenging for me, was I was doing high level dentistry. So I was having high-level complications, and I had aligned my purpose in life with being the best dentist in the world. And so when I had these complications, it was like my whole being is my clinical ability. So if I can't even do that right, what am I worth?
So what I'm hearing you describe is Carol Dweck's work, the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. She's out of Stanford. It's Dweck, and she talks about a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. And you just literally described it. A fixed mindset, a dentist would say, "I have to redo this crown. I'm a failure." Okay, now I'm going to use the F word for just a couple moments. I'm a failure versus the crown failed. What can I learn from this to reduce the possibility of it happening next time? They're two totally different things. As you said, one's connecting your identity to the situation. The other is removing your identity from the situation and kind of, I almost envision it like hovering over and looking for the opportunity to be better next time to reduce the chance of it occurring the next
Yeah,
time.
it's like failing forward, right?
Yeah, totally.
Failing forward. And it's always easier said in
Of course it
hindsight
is.
once you've gotten over the emotion,
Yeah.
because all of my failures, and I'm not just talking about clinically, but relationships or business or anything like this, I've learned so much from.
Oh,
It
yeah.
doesn't mean I'm like, oh yeah, failures are so fun, and gosh, I just love when they happen, but it's made me who I am. And I'm better at it now. Like, I'm better at this self-awareness of even having complications with being a parent. Like this morning, my kids woke up too early. It was so freaking early. And, they're coming out there, and I've got two. And so they're, ah, daddy, this. And, oh, help me with this. And I want milk. And, can you make me this? And I got to get my backpack. And I was like so overstimulated with my kids. And I snapped at my son. I, kind of yelled at him. And then afterwards, I was talking with my wife about it, and I said, "Gosh, I was so reactive with the kids today." And she said, "Well, maybe it's because." Well, no, she said, "Yeah, I heard you when I was in bed." And I said, "But I think it was because I woke up too early. I think I just didn't get my full sleep, and that's why I was reactive." So it's not that. I wasn't perfect in that situation. I could have handled it better as the adult, but at least I was aware of it. And I was aware that what can I do better next time?
And one of my favorite phrases, you did the best you could with the skills you had at the time. And so my good friend Justin Patton taught me that one. And so it's about giving ourselves grace, and when we can evaluate the situation in a graceful manner, it doesn't become an excuse, because the excuse comes in when you don't grow, when you don't learn, when you just say it's because the kids were overstimulating me, it's their fault, versus internalizing it and saying, you know what? That's something that I don't want to do in the future. I believe this is why I did it. Now I'm aware of it. So I'm going to be able to handle it in a different capacity next time, right? The whole idea of being aware of it and not connecting your identity to it. And let's call it what it is. Look, dental school was a very difficult road, and they were looking to impart basic competence within each of us. Some of them did it more effectively than others from a mental health perspective. And so we take that stuff with us, and we also end up judging ourselves, because what we haven't talked about yet is the whole element of comparison, right? And when you finish that procedure, that preparation, that insert, and it's not absolutely perfect, or you take post-op pictures and you notice something you didn't notice before, we end up beating ourselves up for days in some cases, right? Because it's the experience that we've had versus looking to it as a growth opportunity to move onward from that point to somewhere else.
Yeah, this brings up this topic, and I don't know if I've told you about this yet, but I was listening to a guy named Adam Grant recently, and he was talking about how in the Olympic judging rule book, a 10 isn't for perfection, it's for excellence. So he was talking about diving. Even a flawed dive can be a 10. You did a dive that was up to the highest possible standards that humans can achieve. That doesn't mean it's perfect, but it was good enough for excellence. Perfection is zero flaws. Excellence is an extremely high standard that is attainable for me. And that gets me to the next level where I can feel proud and other people may feel proud of me too. And I think that we should change our mindset in dentistry to be achieving excellence or mastery in dentistry and not perfection. And it's so hard for us. I think because of what you just said, how we're trained in dental school, they say this should be a 0.3 margin. And if it's a 0.5, then it's off. And you failed that, that, or at least that section of the test, right? Maybe your anatomy was still good, but the margin wasn't. So if that's a quarter of the grade, then you failed that portion, right? And so that's really been, pun intended, drilled into us for so long that we measure in microns and tenths of a millimeter, and we don't look at, like, step back and look at the gestalt of the entire situation and say, I really did an excellent job and I did the best that I could at that time on this patient.
And then when you're all cranky about it, you go on Instagram and you see all this beautiful work and you think, oh my gosh, I'm a terrible dentist, when they don't show you their cases that they don't like. I mean, some do,
Yeah,
not you
very
know.
rarely.
And so we beat ourselves up. And you know, something I hadn't thought of before too is, like, you see this with some influencers, men, women, whatever, on the more, you know, non-clinical side of Instagram and social media. I love the both. I've seen it both ways, men and women, who are like, okay, this is what you think I look like. This is what I really look like without lighting, and when I get up in the morning, not just having spent 2 hours in the gym, et cetera. And you know, we're being bombarded today by these messages of perfection, or at least comparison, to the point of having the thought that, you know, they're better than we are. It's like, no, it's a snapshot in time. That's all it is,
Yeah,
right?
it's the highlight reels. And just like you said, very few clinicians are showing these complications. And I can understand if your Instagram is really meant for patients, right? Also, too, I think it's important that you show that not everything is perfect, because if you show everything's perfect, guess what kind of patients are going to come to you? Patients that only think you do perfection. Now, that may be great from a sales standpoint, but from a revision standpoint, from a mental health standpoint, from your team going through burnout, you going through burnout, I think you're cultivating a group of people that have unrealistic expectations.
And you also made me think the P word is twofold. It's permanent and perfect. It's
Yes.
both, right?
Yeah,
It's
I really
both.
like that idea of permanent. And I'm trying to think, there may even be some insurance codes that have the word permanent in there.
I don't know about you, but whenever I go to dinner with my non-dental friends and they use the term dental insurance, that's this whole conversation comes up about, no, it's a defined benefit plan and verbiage is important. And so then I
Yes.
give them Gary DeWood's famous analogy that I just absolutely love
What
about
is it?
so he says, if your homeowner's policy worked like your defined benefit plan, if, gosh forbid, your house ever burned down, they would pay to replace your windows and pay to have them clean once a year, every year thereafter.
I love
Because isn't
that.
that great? Because if you look at the definition of insurance, it's a financial instrument to protect you against catastrophic events. Well, at a $1,500 to $2,200 maximum per year, that ain't it.
No. I mean, it was fine in the 70s, like my dad said. That was still the coverage when he got out of school in 76.
Yeah.
was $1,500. Most people had $1,500, but a crown was $200. And so think about it. You could do, your four front teeth, or you could do, whatever you had to do, including your radiographs and your exams, and it was no problem. I always see, and I know this is kind of a caveat from our topic today, but I kind of see insurance as a marketing plan. You are paying for this company to market to their clients, and in exchange, you'll give them a discount. And so many doctors are like, well, I have to be insurance. Everyone here is in network, but you don't. We see it all the time. And it's funny how you and I specifically see a lot of doctors that go out of network and how their mental health grows, how their
Oh,
wellness
100%.
grows.
100%. And the fact of the matter is that for patients that are undergoing a greater degree of restorative or rehabilitative services, they're going to hit their max, at the first appointment anyway. And so it's just a fascinating, intellectually fascinating, academically fascinating. It's very frustrating and real. But it's truly kind of a fascinating thing. I even had an interaction with a family member, a close family member, who was looking to change dentists for whatever reason and was frustrated that, they weren't being given quote upfront pricing because they're out of pocket. And I was like, well, what were you expecting? What were you looking for? And by the time we got all done, I got the individual to understand. It's like, look, what you're asking for isn't doable because there's too many variables, et cetera. We all know this. And so it's an interesting thing. And I think that if we can sit in a place where we as a profession, and I'm talking about you as an individual, recognizing that we in our profession have a history of creating this challenge, and at the same time, it becomes an opportunity to not only engage with the challenge, but overcome the challenge, which will then therefore filter out the kind of patients that don't want to be there anyway. That's a wonderful day at the office.
It's so true. It's so true. I love how you did that. And I want to try to see if I can restate that. You said, we as dentists or as the dental community have created this challenge. We need to communicate this challenge to our patients. And then if those patients don't accept this, then good riddance, because they're the patients that we don't want in our practice. Was that?
Basically,
I really, really like that. It
I mean,
sums it up, and it shows some of the steps we need to take. And I think there's that mindset shift too. So
absolutely.
there's the mindset shift of going from failure to complication to revision. That's, I think, the first mindset shift. And then the other mindset shift with this whole process of talking to the patients is also that you don't need every patient.
Oh, 100%. I have that in my coaching practice. We've talked about this before. I don't need everybody as a client. That's not what I'm here for,
Yeah, and I think this is every business. It's funny, every time I post something about dismissing patients or not taking every patient into your practice, it's funny how I get DMs from people that I went to high school with that aren't in dentistry, or that, are my friends from around town, and they say like, "Wow, this really, I know you're talking about dentistry, but this really pertains to me and I really need to internalize this in my own business." Whether they have a tech company or are a plumber or, an interior designer. I think so many of us think it's abundance. It's the more clients, let's go out of dentistry. It's the more clients we have that builds our business, but it's not. It's the most clients that you have that are right for your specific business.
And I know, for example, because where my head was going is this all goes back to how we communicate with the patients, right? And so I know in your Lightside course, you actually have some scripts and some resources to help people build their own script. And when I use the word script, you know, sometimes people get a little freaky that it's got to be verbatim. It doesn't need to be verbatim. No. You need to make it your own. But the idea of how do you have that conversation? And I know you've even talked about the fact that, you know, in your practice, there was never such a thing as an insert appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you set yourself up for the expectation. So
that's
why don't
right.
you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in our practice, we don't have deliveries. We don't have inserts. We don't have, a crown seat that a lot of people put, because that's communicated through everybody, through the doctor, through the assistants, to the front office team members, all the way to the patients, that they'll say, okay, next time you come in, you're getting your crown.
Yep.
And we know that 98% of the time they do get their crown, right? But it's those 2% of patients that drive you crazy and that ruin your day and make you feel bad.
Yeah.
And so I started talking about this as everything's a try-in. So next time you come in, we're going to try it in. If everything fits, if it looks good, if the margins are good, I like it, you like it, great, you leave with it that day. However,
exactly.
Sometimes it takes two or three tries before we have to do this. And this is for dentures, this is for implants, this is for everything. I mean, even when we're taking a tooth out, we say, I'm going to attempt to take the tooth out.
Yeah.
Because we've all had one or two of these teeth that we have to send to the oral surgeon. We work 2 hours and can't get it out.
Yep.
And that is setting the patient's expectations low so that you become a hero 98% of the time.
Yeah.
And because you've communicated that, what a lot of the people that have taken my courses have told me is, it's not only about setting the patient expectation, but it frees you up.
Oh,
so
yeah.
you don't have to think like, oh my God, this patient's coming in and I have to deliver this crown no matter what it takes. What if the contact's open?
Yeah.
Right? Are you going to add porcelain? I mean, you could if you have a porcelain oven, but if it's not, what are you going to do? You have to take a new impression, or you have to take a pickup impression.
Or
So
another scan
it
or whatever.
Frees you up to go in and say, my goal in this appointment is to attempt to place this restoration, attempt to place this implant. And you can
Absolutely.
feel like all I have to do is try.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it even gives you the opportunity to combat, you know, one of the P words, the permanent one. It's like, look, you know, we're going to, you know, you're coming back next time for a try-in. There's various elements that we want to try, the, you know, how it fits to your bite, how it fits around the collar, what it looks like, et cetera. You know, we both need to be happy because the truth of the matter is that no restoration that's man-made is 100% successful. There's always a chance of challenge. There's always a chance of breakdown, et cetera. And I'm just riffing sitting right here, but that's the idea, you know, of as coaches would say, planting a seed. You're planting the seed so that you're not creating the expectation. Plant the seed, don't create the expectation. There's a difference, right?
Totally true. And I think that is the importance. It's that we set the expectation, we communicate the expectation. And when we do that, in that process, both parties feel more relaxed.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to get there at one point, but when we talk about certain team management stuff and delegation, oh my gosh, because you know my delegation framework, it's the same thing, because good communication with human beings is good communication with human beings, and setting expectations is setting expectations. So
well, this is the thing. It's that, you know, research shows, I was just looking at an article, research shows, let me see if I can pull it up, that 85% of your success is dependent on your personality, your communication skills. Only 15% of your success is dependent on your technical abilities.
Yeah.
Now, if we looked at dentists, what percentage of dentists are spending 85% of their time learning how to communicate better? Very few, less than 1%. However, I would guess that this 1% that we have are probably some of the happiest patients, some of the most successful, or sorry, not patients, some of the happiest doctors,
Yeah.
some of the most successful doctors, some of the most balanced doctors.
Absolutely.
Because what most of us do is just say, well, I need to get better clinically. I need to get better clinically. I need to learn veneers and
Yep.
implants and smile design and injectable veneers
Yep.
and 3D printing. And that's what's going to bring my success. That's only 15% of your success.
You're talking about dental dualism, as I like to say.
That's
You know,
right.
and we, in some ways, it's frustrating to me, but in other ways, it makes total sense, right? Because our training was so clinical and tactile, right? So we get
Yes.
out of school and we equate learning with tactical elements, procedural elements. I know you and I have talked about this before. You know, one of the big ahas for me, and I know for you too, is just the simple recognition that verbal and mental skills take as much practice and stick-to-itiveness to master as the hand skill does. If anyone can embrace that, that's the key to the kingdom. Because I laugh, Kyle, when people say to me, "Oh, I wish I could talk the way you do. I wish I could say things the way you do. It just rolls off your tongue." And I'm laughing inside my head going, I've worked on this for so long. I used to feel like I was stumbling over my words, didn't know what to say, blah, 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 blah. It's no different than a hand skill. It just takes practice. That's it.
I had someone at my last lecture come up to me and say, "Wow, you're such a great speaker." And it was really nice.
Yeah, of
Going to
course.
say, "Well, I better be after doing,
Exactly.
gosh, I mean, I do 40 a year for the last 14 years."
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same thing. You know,
Totally.
you do it all the
Totally.
time that you get better. And this idea of failures and complications and having the communication, we need to just start communicating it. And the first time, guess what? It's probably going to be awkward, right? Now you can get the scripts from you and I. You can take some of our courses, and that can give you a start to it. But as you say it more, you start to memorize it. You start to add in your own little nuances to it, your own personality to it. And all of a sudden, you are so confident. You're talking to the person, you're looking them in the eye, and they're thinking, wow, this doctor really knows what they're talking
Exactly.
about. And even though they're telling me that things may happen, I really trust them. And because I trust them, I'm going to go through a treatment. Not because I think they're perfect, because I trust them. There's a study that we did with my AI company, Pearl, where, gosh, I can't remember. I think it was something like 71% of patients said that trust is the most important factor for case acceptance.
Yeah, 100%.
Not money, not
Nope.
time. We always think, oh, if it's above this amount of money or if it takes this amount of time, they're not going to do it. It's trust.
You know, it's you making me think, you know, Dr. Spear always talks about the idea that we have this fallacy that somebody comes in the first time and we can't tell them everything because we haven't built trust yet. And he's like, no, it's the transparency. It's sharing with them what you see and allowing them to kind of process that, the benefits of treatment, the consequences of no treatment, for them to want to have the next part of the conversation about what are we going to do about it. You know, this idea that we have to build trust. Trust is in your communication, your transparency, your choice of words, and all of that can be learned. All of it.
And again, 85% of that is your communication skills. They're not going to go through with you. They haven't seen what work you do. I
Exactly.
mean, maybe they saw an Instagram post, or maybe they looked on your website or whatever,
Sure.
but they don't know what your margins are like.
No,
They don't know you have
100%.
zero bone loss in your implants. They don't know any
Yep.
of this stuff. They're
Exactly.
going off of your personality and your communication skills. I mean, every one of us knows a dentist that you're like, wow, he or she is so successful. I've seen their work. It's not even that great, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
And, that's a little judgmental, of course, but it shows. It's
It's
not
true.
because their dentistry is so amazing.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. It's true.
So, any final thoughts on failures, complications, revisions, changing our mindset?
Yeah, I think it's very simple. It's just we need to recognize that not every procedure is going to go to plan. That's okay. There's no such thing as 100% success rate. And that if we can start to communicate expectations differently to our patients, it will also begin to retrain our own brain and our own internal talk track to allow us to sleep better at night, not to give ourselves excuse, but to give ourselves grace so that we can continue to learn and be better each and every time for the experience that preceded it.
Yeah, I love that. And I'll re-say what you had said before, which is realizing that we've created this problem, communicating this to the patient, changing our mindset and communicating it, and then realizing that if patients leave,
Yeah, it's okay.
those are the ones that we want to leave.
Yeah.
And so in that process, we also need to take our identity out of the complication. Carol Dweck's talk
Absolutely.
about growth mindset. Well,
Great book.
good. Well, it's been lovely talking to you as always.
Good talk to you too.
And thanks everybody for listening. And if you're interested in anything that we do, whether that's Martin's private coaching where he comes into your practice, or his speaking, or my AI company, or my Lightside Academy, you can go to wellnessanddentistry.com. You will see all of our links, and we hope to see you at our next episode.
Take care.
Bye, everyone.